All rights, it comes with responsibilities. KPFT is there for you every day, 365 days out of the year, powering you through your day with great music, news, and more. Please contribute to it now at kpft.org. Thank you. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Technology Bites here on KPFT Houston.
Hear nothing. There we go. Thank you. Hey. You know, so good to be on the air tonight and not be doing a fundraiser.
That didn't work.
So good to be on the air and have everything going off according to plan. Welcome to Technology Bites, everyone. I'm Jay Lee. I'm just hanging out here in the studio by myself, thinking about computer things.
Can hear your mind going
a million miles a second.
Can hear your mind beeping.
I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. Welcome to the show. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
And he's...
Roofhouse.
Barrett is on his way to the studio. He has a large collection of vehicles that are not suited to drive in the rain. And no vehicle that is suited to drive in the rain. So he's waiting on the whimsy of Yellow Cab or whoever.
Uber.
So we're waiting on his arrival. But It is such a relief not to be doing fundraiser, you ungrateful people. We did really good last week, though. Appreciate everyone who called in during the fund drive and made a pledge. We hope that you'll make good on that. If you didn't, put it down on the plastic or give us your bank account details. We hope that you will respond when you get your notice in the mail about paying your pledge. And hopefully some of you are grabbing some really nice premiums and thank you gifts for the fund drive. All right, so let me give out the vital statistics on the program tonight. You can join us in many different ways online. We have the website up at geekradio.com. You can go there and learn what you need to learn about the show. We're also hanging out in IRC, Internet Relay Chat, in the channel Tech Byte. So if you join irc.cuckoo.com and join the channel Tech Bytes, you will be in the official channel for the show. You can also, if you don't use your own IRC client, you can go to geekradio.com and use our IRC client.
It's free.
Our RC.
It's free.
And you can also contact us via the website. You can call into the show tonight if you want to be on the air. It's free. 713-526-5738. You may remember that number. You didn't dial it for the last few weeks when we asked you to make some donations to the station, but you have an opportunity to dial it this week, and it's free.
Free.
All right, so it looks like the fall drive results, we raised $257,629, which was 81% of the goal, so we have that going for us at least. There's Barrett.
Well, now that we've made our goal, show up.
Yeah, I was thinking that maybe you just didn't want to show up. You hung your head in shame for the last time and weren't coming back.
No, I've still got life. It hasn't been beaten out of me yet. A little bit.
We can work on that.
Sure. When you walk home tonight in the rain, it'll probably take care of the rest.
Yeah, I called in a call for paid transportation about an hour and a half ago, and they just never showed. So
you walked?
No, I threw on two pairs of pants. And
rode your bike?
Yeah, because I've been riding in the rain for the past, you know, like a lot of trips today, so I've pretty much got all my clothes wet. So I said, sure, I'll call a trusted, I don't know if they're a city service, but, you know, a trusted name and give them an hour or two, and no.
No.
Nope.
They said, you know, he's probably an Uber rider, so we don't want to deal with him.
This is going to push me in that direction. I've never actually called him myself, but yeah I think... or Lyft or something.
Should have called them, then had them come into the show and tell us about their service or how things are going. That would have been kind of technically relevant. All right, so we got a lot of calls coming in for some reason.
Yeah, let them ring. Keep on calling.
Let them ring, and what we're going to do is
I want to play this first.
You want to play something for
us? Yeah, I want to try it and see if it works this time.
Okay.
Remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
I feel happy.
You're not going to play the 1812 overture?
That's a nice bit of work there for the day after the election. all right, well, let's go out to San Antonio with the Technology Bytes Info Shot featuring Peter Hughes in San Antonio doing the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
You know, it may seem like a group that you wouldn't want to be a member of is a particular political party in this country, but there is a group that the week before was even kind of worse, and that is in the private rocket business. We didn't get to cover it during the pledge drive, but there were two major accidents in the private rocketry business. One of them was Orbital, which was launching. This wasn't experimental. This was an actual launch to resupply the International Space Station. And 15 seconds off the ground, they detonated the thing because it was going wrong. Apparently, they chose to. And since it was last week, the reason why there's news about it this week is they think that they know what happened. And it was they believe the failure likely originated in or directly affected the turbopump machinery of the main engine. And these were engines that were bought, that were built in the 1960s for the Soviet moon program and then refurbished by an American rocket company. You wonder if they used original Soviet parts. So 5,000 pounds of experiments and supplies for the space station were blown up in the thing, and they'll have to figure out how to replace that resupply. The other bad news on the rocket front was from Virgin, they had a crash that one of the test pilots actually died. They had a malfunction in the part of the rocket that carries the crew. You know, that people would be in for space tourism. So they're looking at what they need to do to show people it's safe, or decide if they can't do it. So that one was sadder, but also just interesting that it happened within days of the other problem. And better news, and this one actually is kind of surprised me. The Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, in case you didn't know, a nonprofit digital rights group, has investigated the security of various messaging apps and created a new secure messaging scorecard, which you can find if you go to EFF.org. You can see it so that you can check all the tools. The thing that was interesting is the apps that scored highest on EFF's chart are those dedicated to secure messaging, you know, like that you'd have to download special apps like Chat Secure, Signal, or CryptoCat for iPhones. But on the just more mainstream, Apple's iMessage scored a 5 out of 7 check marks, earning points for encrypting messages in transit and encryption that's unreadable by Apple. And then FaceTime also scored well. It scored the same as iMessage. So that's not too bad that they the biggest thing was that the biggest problems with theirs is from the 7 checkpoints is that you can't verify your contacts' identities, and the code isn't open to independent review. Obviously, not open source. It's not not going to be open to other people to see. So, just something to know. Like you said, it sort of surprised me. I mean, usually Apple, they do okay, but they aren't up at the higher end of the securing things, security and privacy kind of end of the pool. And now here's one. This one, mostly it's just the number. You know, we like big data here at Technology Bytes. We enjoy massive amounts of data. Data porn, I guess you could almost say it. Here's a good one. At the Large Hadron Collider, you know, they do pretty serious science. And one way to measure how much serious science they do is they are ratcheting up their data collection to the point where they're going to be creating 400 petabytes of data every year. So far in its entire lifespan, the LHC has generated an archive of 100 petabytes, and that total is currently growing at 27 petabytes per year. But by 2023, CERN's infrastructure manager Tim Bell expects the facility to churn out 400 petabytes. Just for those of you counting at home who like to know how many zeros are involved in this, it's 400 million gigabytes. How many terabyte hard drives do you need to do that? An insane amount of data. How are they handling this? The European scientists are squaring up to the problem by using OpenStack, shifting the data to storage to servers in Budapest rather than upgrading CERN's existing data center. They now have 4 OpenStack clouds at CERN, the largest comprising 7,000 cores on approximately 3,000 servers. But they're expecting to pass 150,000 cores in total by the first quarter of 2015. And if they're going to be ready for 2023, imagine how many more servers and cores they're going to have to add. So that's just impressive. That is an amazing number, and it certainly caught my eye when I saw it. And now this is sort of, I guess we're into the new stuff. Some of these things are going to ship, and some of them are prototypes. This one's interesting. It is shipping. AT&T announced the Timex Ironman 1 GPS Plus Fitness Watch is going to be available for pre-order this Friday, November 7th. It's a fully connected 3G fitness tracker. 3G meaning it's connected up to your phone data, so that while you're running, it's keeping track of the stuff. It can map your runs, share your location, and send and receive messages without the help of a smartphone. It's not cheap. It's about $400 and comes with 1 year of service. And then after that, if you still want to keep using the device, it's $40 a year for the data. It's a chunky, rubbery device, pretty big, but it is designed to withstand sweat and the abuse that happens during intense workouts or runs. It's water resistant up to 50 meters, so you can wear it swimming. So you can do the like Ironman triathlon, and this thing will work. The tracking system lets wearers share their location with others on both private and public levels, and its data can be synced with a variety of fitness databases like MapMyFitness. So if you're can't wait for Apple's Watch, which I've got some rumor news on that in a minute, then maybe you want to go with a Timex. I guess probably the most expensive Timex you've ever bought. And then in concept stuff, you know, I'm not going to circle back because it happened while we weren't, we weren't doing news. HP announced their Sprout, their new concept, their new PC. And now Dell, I guess, answered back and has their kind of smart desk prototype with tabletop touchscreen. That seems to be the whole new thing, is where, you know, basically getting rid of the keyboard and replacing it with something more of a touch-oriented approach. The HP Sprout, you can go look it up, but basically it uses a projector on the top and can, uses that to project an image on your desktop, literally on the desktop, the top of your desk where your computer sits, not the desktop on your screen. So much for the skeuomorphic metaphors, huh? Anyway, it projects a thing. So for like the keyboard, there's not a physical keyboard. It projects that in front of itself on another piece. So anyways, Dell was working on this, obviously not knowing about the Sprout PC, but they showed off their own double touchscreen PC, which they call the Smart Desk. Like the Sprout, it uses a large LCD monitor, presumably the Dell UltraSharp 27 Ultra HD 5K monitor that they launched in September, paired with a touchscreen display that sits flat on the desk in front of it. There's no indication Dell plans to commercialize the concept, but it does appear to be more than just art. At Dell World in Austin, they let attendees publish photos of the Smart Desk in action, which that's going on today. So there's pictures from today. Their description is just kind of their description is full of marketing speak and all that kind of stuff. It appears the Dell Smart Desk uses touchscreens in both the vertical and the tabletop LCDs to allow users to manipulate objects by voice and by stylus. So it treats the tabletop LCD kind of as a tablet, and it sounds like the workplace is synced to the cloud and that users can push their flat tabletop LCDs together to create an ad hoc network for some kind of collaboration. So that's interesting. It doesn't sound like anybody's clamoring right now for desktops like the Sprout or this concept, but it sounds, you know, it certainly is worth it for them to take a look at the future and see where this should go. I mean, these kinds of screens and touch screen stuff could be very important to people who do like CAD work or video editing and, you know, digital creative type stuff, which Apple used to kind of monopolize, but it looks like Dell and HP are trying to think down that road as well. And then a couple other things. Another thing that got announced during the time that we were, you know, during the pledge drive, the Nexus 9 tablet from Google shipped. And the thing is, right now, if you want to get a Nexus 9, it's the latest Android tablet. It's got their new operating system on it and all of that. If you were thinking about getting it, you may want to hurry and do it right now, because there is a special HTC site. If you go to htc.com/us/go/HTC hot deals, I'm sure if you go to their site, you can find it, or if you do a search on this, you can get the brand new Nexus 9 tablet of the 16 gig Wi-Fi model for $199 while supplies last. It's supposed to be, the retail price is $400, so they'll give you 50% off. So they're apparently these kinds of deals are going to be running for HTC Things for the next 9 weeks. So you may want to bookmark that site. I guess it's not Black Friday. It's like Black November and December, something like that. But yeah, so if you're interested in the Nexus 9, which is the latest and greatest Nexus tablet, some of the reviews I've seen have said it's not as slick and high-end as they expected, that it doesn't compare as well with other devices as previous Nexus devices. But heck, go try one out. And if you're interested, or if you're the Android type and you like the Nexus stuff, saving a couple $100, you know, I'm certainly, I'm all for helping you save money if that's a thing you want. And then a couple Apple thingies, a couple Apple rumors. This one, the rumor, it's a French blog that actually in the past has been pretty good about their accuracy. The rumors are that the base price for the stainless steel Apple Watch is going to be $500, and then the gold edition, the rumor says that it'll be $4,000. Ouch! I mean, that's so far, that's beyond a luxury brand. They say it's the summary says that it makes sense if you consider the Apple Watch to be a luxury brand timepiece. It's like, you know, I don't know about you, but $4,000, I'm not going to put the cost of a used car on my wrist. I'm also not going to spend more on a watch smart device that costs more than my desktop computer setup, the whole setup. Anyway, but so we'll see what happens. I mean, obviously there's some time before Apple announces, and that'll be after the first of the year. So we'll, you know, I guess we'll see what happens on the rumor front on what the pricing is. And then this one's a more interesting rumor, and it's not so much, it does apply to Apple, you know, you're Mr. Fanboy. It does apply to Apple, but it also, it's a sneak peek ahead. You may have heard me talk about, there's the new processors that are coming out from Intel. And the deal is that there's processors that they're going to have out in the first part of this year, of this coming year, and they're very quickly going to move to a much better, much higher end processor called Broadwell. And Broadwell is the one that is the next jump up from Intel. And then later in the year, there's going to be an even bigger jump. But they're not supposed to ship till early 2015, but there's some interesting news about the processor that could wind up in the 12-inch MacBook Pro notebook. Per Mac Rumors, Intel began shipping some ultra-low-power Broadwell chips, also known as Core M, a couple of months ago, and here's the part that gets this: the Broadwell chips are going to end up in computers that you use in the future at some point. These chips are designed to run at just 4.5 watts. Just think about that for a minute. That's like a nightlight kind of wattage, and are intended for next generation fanless PCs and tablets, fitting perfectly with circulating rumors of a thinner, fanless 12-inch MacBook Air, potentially with a Retina display. The first batch of Core M chips launched in early September, and the Intel now appears to have quietly added several new processor options to the Core M family. Internal roadmaps have targeted an early 2015 launch for these chips, but Intel's chip database shows the new chips of having launched this quarter. So Apple has apparently been testing them, including a high-end chip, and then all of the new chips offer faster chips than the initial batch of Core M chips from September. Lenovo's Yoga 3 Pro is the first PC to take advantage of the first batch of Broadwell Core M chips, and its performance has been lackluster, apparently. It's unclear, however, whether the issues are due more to the Core M's limitations for power efficiency or Lenovo's design decisions. Still, the new second batch of Core M chips appears to mark a significant step forward from the earlier versions while maintaining the low power draw. So the 12-inch MacBook Air rumors say that it has a likely mid-2015 launch, but if Intel's moved forward on the Broadwell Core M chips, then it may be that you get to see the new thinner MacBook Air earlier in the year. And then the thing to watch out for, since I messed it up at the beginning of this story, the Broadwell chips are a short-term thing, and then there will be another set of chips that come out at the end of the year that will apparently amazingly blow away these chips. So if you don't have to buy this earlier this year, if you're having to decide between replacing a computer in the early to mid part of this year and you're patient enough or your situation works where you can wait, you may want to wait until the fall because the new chips that are coming out are supposed to be just unbelievably great. And that is the Technology Bytes Info Shot News, and I'm Peter Hughes.
All right, so no Nexus tablets for us. They're all sold out.
Are they? Oh, you looked it up? Oh, bummer. That's the problem about being on at night.
Yeah, they bum-rushed the site and took it down, and they only had a couple hundred of them to give away at that price.
Oh, jeez. Well, you can check it tomorrow and see what they're going to be doing deals like this for the next 9 weeks or something. So maybe even Christmas Eve, you'll be sitting there trying to get your cheap Nexus 9.
All right. Well, we're going to open the phone lines up now. And wow, people called in early. Where were you a few weeks ago or last week even? 713-526-5738 to be on the air with Technology Bytes. I see that we have calls in the queue. So, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up first?
All right, up first on the show, we're going to start it off with Torchy.
Torchy, you're on the air with Technology Bytes.
Yes, a few years ago, my son set up an iTunes account for my computer, and I put about 100, 200 CDs on there. My computer crashed. I have a new computer, but I don't know how to find the cloud or where it is or how to get into it.
Well, if he took a bunch of your existing CDs and just what they call ripped them, converted them to digital music files, they should all be in a folder on your computer somewhere.
On the old computer.
On the old computer, right.
But the old computer crashed.
Did you have a backup or anything?
Since they're in the cloud.
Well, Do you know they're in the cloud? I'm thinking maybe they're not in the cloud. I'm thinking that they're on that crashed hard drive.
Okay.
Where is that computer now?
Oh, probably back in the bedroom.
All right. Well, when you say it crashed, how did it crash?
The hard drive crashed.
Well, I mean, did the hard drive completely seize up, or did it just start acting weird, or both? What I'm thinking is a lot of times when people say that their hard drive crashed, you know, the operating system may have failed or it may not load Windows, but the drive may still have most of the data intact. So it's conceivable that you could pull the hard drive out of that computer and connect it to an enclosure and read the files that are on that drive to get your music files off of it.
Okay.
Assuming that's where they are.
Or did you have them on an iPod or anything? Did you only have them in iTunes?
I had some of them on an iPod.
Oh.
Okay.
You can pull them off the iPod, but if you only had some of them, that's not very worthwhile.
I'm thinking that what how many, you say like 100 or a couple of hundred CDs? A
couple hundred.
All right. Well, obviously, and I don't want to beat this horse too hard, but, you know, backing up your data before the crash could have helped, but I'm thinking that those files might still be on that drive. So if you can get that drive taken out of the computer, that you can get like a $20 device that will allow you to take that hard drive and plug it into your new computer to the USB so that you can read the files on it. And you might find your music library and be able to copy that over to the new computer and then have iTunes re-index them.
Okay, if I go back and put these in again, I should back up everything, right?
Well, you should back up your data as a matter of course, just so that if your computer crashes, you don't lose all your files, because I know it's an investment of time to rip 100 or 200 CDs. But I'm thinking that those files might still be there. Do you have anyone who's somewhat technically capable that might be able to do that for you?
No, my husband and I are technically incapable of that.
Well, what I would consider doing is,
that's okay.
I would, you know,
there was some easy way to do it.
Well, there's, it's not, it's easy depending on, or not easy depending on your capabilities, but it's not beyond the realm of comprehension that you could open that computer that crashed. Was it a desktop computer?
Yes.
Okay. The hard drive is kind of, you know, you can sort out which piece inside of that old computer is the hard drive.
Yeah, you know, I know that.
So you could take whatever, however you take it out of there, undo the screws or flip the little clips that allow you to pull that drive out. You can unplug the cables from it. The drive will come out as a complete unit. And it has two connectors on it. One is a power connector and one is the data cable. And all you have to do is find an enclosure. You could go to like Micro Center or Fry's and get a hard drive adapter that will allow you to plug that hard drive into a cable that you can then plug into your new computer, and the new computer will detect it, and you could use Windows Explorer and look inside the hard drive and see if you can find your music files. Just search for anything that's MP3 or whatever the format it's saved in, and you might be able to find a folder that has all of those CDs, and you could take those files and drag them on, you know, and drop onto the new computer and put them in your music folder on the new computer, and then tell iTunes to re-index them, and you should be good to go. As long as the hard drive itself didn't just, you know, completely seize up and it's not readable. A lot of times when a computer crashes, it's really just the operating system stops loading or it has some other issues, but the data on that drive is still good.
Okay. All right, thank you very, very much.
All right, well, good luck. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. You know, I mean, you could, it's... I'm assuming that's where the files are, and I think there's a relatively good chance that those files are probably still intact. Otherwise, hopefully, you still have the several hundred CDs, and they could be ripped again. But if it's important enough to you and you don't have a backup, you can take it to a computer shop and have them look on the hard drive and see if they can see those files and have
did
them.
She say it was a PC.
She did. Well, I'm assuming she did.
I'm just curious.
With her being able to take
she
over,
said iTunes,
the hard drive out.
Well, she was using iTunes to rip all the CDs, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was a Mac, but I'm assuming a PC. But either way, even if it was a Mac and she got a new Mac, she should still be able to take
say,
the drive.
Like, doing backups on a
Mac,
a Mac is insanely easy. I mean, there's no reason anybody should not do backups.
Right.
Yeah, unless buying a USB drive and plugging it into your computer is too complicated for you, you can back up your computer pretty thoroughly.
All right, 713-526-5738, another call that reminds us of the importance of backups. So let that be a lesson to you. If you want to save your files, back them up. And as they mentioned, on a Mac, it's pretty easy, but it's not that hard on a Windows computer either. A lot of the backup programs will get all of your user files and put them on another hard drive for you so that if your main computer dies, you have access to them. And, I mean, a couple hundred CDs, I don't know how much data that is. Probably.
Depends on what they were ripped at.
Yeah. But you could conceivably upload them to the so-called cloud. You can do cloud storage, but it requires you know where that is and that you have enough storage to put those files on. But it's usually better just to have them on a second hard drive on your desk. Groove House.
Yes.
Who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, this is sort of a follow-up call, and I do have a question. A couple of weeks ago, I called because my computer would not connect to my server.
But you didn't call during the 3 weeks that followed that call to give us any money, right?
No, I didn't, but I did give you station some money.
Okay.
It wasn't your show. Is that you taking that personal?
No, I won't take that personal.
Oh, anyway, so getting back to technology. So I finally, someone suggested that my modem was defective and I couldn't connect, but then suddenly I could connect, so I called Technology Bytes, and you guys told me that the reason I couldn't connect to the Internet, even though I had a connection to my provider, could be a number of things, and that it could be hardware, software, servers, so I should contact my server, which I did, and I spoke to AT&T, and they told me they had me go into the help connection, And they discovered that I was on a web browser number 8 from Windows XP, and that had been discontinued. So they told me I had to download Google Plus or something to update, and I said, well, gee, I can't get on the Internet. what's the deal here? And they said, well, you need to go talk to a technician. So I went down to my handy-dandy computer repair store, and they said they never heard of the Windows web browser 8 being discontinued, and they said I had a malware problem, and that was the problem, and for $80 they could fix it. So I'm back to Technology Bytes. Have you ever heard of the Windows Explorer number 8 being discontinued?
Internet Explorer 8, I don't believe, is discontinued. The one that people are really, you know, that's dead in the water is Internet Explorer 6. But Internet Explorer 8's probably just fine.
It's still old, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's old. 9, 10, and 11 now available. But that being said, Internet Explorer 8 should still get you access
still work
to web
as a web browser.
You said Google, though. So Google, I think a handful of months ago, officially dropped support for IE8.
Ah, because that's my homepage, so...
Well, Google might squawk at you and say, you know, you're using an outdated browser, you know, upgrade your browser or something. But regardless...
Well, what should I do? Should I have the guy, should I pay my $80 and get it fixed or buy a frickin' smartphone?
Well, I don't think a smartphone's necessarily the answer
well,
to this problem.
Well, what do I do with 5 years of email if I discontinue my Internet connection?
Well, nobody's suggesting you discontinue your Internet connection, but even if you did discontinue your Internet connection, you still have all your email on the hard drive somewhere.
Wait a minute. They transferred me without permission from my previous Internet. What is the Windows Internet? The Windows email is...
Outlook Express.
There's Outlook Express.
Outlook.
There's...
I had Outlook, and I had it for a year, and it disappeared without any notice whatsoever, and all of a sudden now I'm on Yahoo. And
through
Yahoo has been a pain in the ass, and AT&T is blaming Google.
Gary, settle down. Settle
down.
We
can solve all these things.
All right. First of all, are you still unable to get to the Internet?
That is correct.
All right. Now, the company that you took the computer to that suggested you might have a malware problem, that sounds reasonable. It's possible that malware is what's causing your computer to be unable to connect to the Internet, even though you've got a connection to your access point and so forth. You can conceivably, although based on our previous conversations, I'm not sure how well this will go, but you could conceivably treat your own malware issue if you had the ability to get an anti-malware piece of software downloaded onto something that you could then run on this computer. So you could run Malwarebytes, you could run Spybot Search and Destroy, you could run a number of different programs that might clear up the software issues if it is, in fact, a software issue. Now, if that is not something that's within your capabilities, or you don't feel comfortable doing that, or you don't have the ability to do it because you can't get to the Internet, you can't download any software, you'd have to have a computer that could connect to the Internet so you could download the software.
And then either burn it to a CD or put it on a thumb drive.
But my thought is that based on what you're describing to me, that it might be worth your while to pay that technician the $80 to see if they can get your system up and running and where it'll work. If you don't want to pay the $80 to do that and you can't do it on your own and you want to just throw it in the garbage, then you're going to lose
smartphone.
All your files and just go to a smartphone.
But you'll still be able to check your email with the browser on your smartphone.
But my belief is that based on what you're telling me, I think what happened is you were using Outlook Express to check your email. For reasons unknown, Outlook Express vanished, which is not like something out. It's not like somebody says, okay, time to turn off this person's Outlook Express. Something must have happened to the program, but your mail files are probably still there. Now, I don't know about now.
Well, wait. The Outlook Express went away 3 years ago. I've been on Yahoo for 3 years.
So you've been accessing your email from a web page from yahoo.com?
Yes, exactly. Okay, I go to Google, and then I Google Yahoo, and then...
Why don't you just type in Yahoo?
And then mail comes up,
all right.
And I click on mail, and there I am.
So any computer that you have, or any... device that you have that has a connection to the internet will be able to get to Yahoo, and you'll be able to get to your
and
mail.
And your last 3 years of mail should be there.
Right.
Although any mail before that, depending on how you had Outlook Express configured, might still be on your computer or disappeared with Outlook Express when it disappeared 3 years ago.
All right. Now, the dumbest question ever asked. If I get a new device, do I have to have my AT&T make any changes so
no.
they recognize me?
No.
Really?
Really.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
All right. Good luck. Thanks for your call, Gary. Bye. Whew. All over the place.
Yeah.
Now I know why that guy from Car Talk died.
Except not. I was going to say, except not on the internet. He's all over the place, except not on the internet.
All right. 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We've got one call in the queue, and all the lines are open. So feel free to dial in as we – it's still 20 minutes before the top of the first hour of this program. We've got a whole another hour after that. So now an hour and a half left to take your calls and try to answer your questions if we can help. 713-526-KPFT. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, it's Larry.
Larry, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, Jilly. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Good deal. Jilly, I told about this problem with you guys a few months ago, but it's come up again. I have a couple of old programs, an accounting program, actually, a Quicken program, and a database program I've used forever, but would only run on Windows XP. Now, I don't have a full version of XP. I have, I guess you call it an installation copy that I've kind of managed with. Unfortunately, my computer just died, and I've got to buy another computer. So at this point, I'm wondering, should I get a, well, I'm wondering if I can possibly load both XP and Windows 8.1 and just easily switch from operating system to another, or, is that easy to do?
It's not going to be easy to try to load XP onto a modern computer. It could conceivably be done, but you would be hard-pressed to find some drivers that would match your hardware that would allow XP to control things like your video, your network, all that. So you could run into some problems. Now, Quicken, I know, has new versions that'll run in the new operating system, so you could update your Quicken. What's the database program?
Oh gosh, it's an old. I guess you call it a flash-based program. Actually, it's kind of a DOS program that runs under a Windows shell.
Okay.
It's geared because like I said, I've used it for years and it's got lots of good data in there. But, I guess my other option, Jay, and, let me know what you think about this, is buying a used desktop that has Windows XP Pro already installed.
You might be able to do that if you were to go to the Goodwill Computer Store, Computer CopyWorks or whatever. It's run by Goodwill. They sell refurbished computers.
It's out on Westheimer,
out past the Beltway.
Pretty far out, yeah.
But you might contact them to see if they have any XP machines. Now, another option you would have would be to get a computer running Windows 7 or Windows 8 or whatever, and you could virtualize Windows XP.
Ah.
You could run an XP computer as a virtual machine on this new computer, and then you could load your programs into that. That would take a little bit of effort, but it's not that hard.
Nowadays is not that all that difficult to do.
No, it's not that tough. And I'm looking. There's even a Windows XP mode download that Microsoft offers from the Download Center where you can go and install that, and it might be like a step along the way to getting those old programs to run before you go and set up a full virtual machine.
Guys, let me ask you, can you give me kind of an easy, easy description of what's involved in setting up a virtual machine?
Well, what happens?
How do that?
What happens is that you take your main computer, which would be your host computer. This would be like the Windows 8 or Windows 7 computer that you would acquire. And you would use a virtualization software. There's a number of different virtualization software. There's free ones like VirtualBox,
which is what I use.
And there are commercial ones like Parallels and VMware. And basically what these programs do is you install these programs on your computer, whichever one you choose, and then you set up what's called a virtual machine. So when you launch the program and you tell it, I want to create a virtual machine, it takes you through the process of inserting the CD or the install media, and it's like installing XP on a computer, but instead you're installing it on a virtual computer that's hosted on your main computer.
Okay.
So you follow the steps and you go through installing it. And what's nice about a virtual machine is that it doesn't require hardware specific drivers, because it talks through the virtualization software to your main computer's drivers so that it can control your sound card and control your video card and network and so forth. So what happens is you load the virtual software, whether it's VirtualBox or VMware, and you follow the instructions for creating a new virtual machine. And usually what it entails is saying, I'm going to create a new virtual machine running Windows XP. It will say okay, and it will ask you to allocate some resources to it. Usually you follow the defaults. It will ask you to insert the media. You put the CD in. It boots that up in the virtual machine, and then it takes you through the install process, and you install the operating system. So then you have a computer within a computer, basically. And that computer within the computer is running the operating system that you choose, in this case, XP. So you run it just like an XP computer, but it's in a window inside of the other computer. And then, and then you click on the start button inside the virtual machine. You say, I want to install this program. So you install the disk that has your Quicken on it, and it will load Quicken. If you have the other program, assuming it's not on a floppy disk, you set that up, and you set it up inside of the virtual machine. So it's not terribly hard to do, but, you know, it's something you would have to work for.
All right, Jamie, one fast question. I mean, that idea sounds very plausible to me. The Windows XP disk that I have is not a full version. In fact, I can load it. It's got the drives in there, but it's the kind of diskette that you have to authenticate. And unfortunately, you know, with Microsoft not supporting XP, I can never authenticate it at all. So in the past, I've had to basically reboot it every 30 days. If I use a virtual memory system, will I have to do that again, or will I be...
You'll have the same problems with activating the software.
Okay.
You'll have the same problems, because the virtual machine is just like it sounds. It's a machine, but it's virtual, so it's gonna emulate the same things that a regular computer would. So you might run into those problems. So it might be worth your while. I mean, I would seriously consider updating the software you're using, because it's going to get harder and harder to support these old programs as things go forward. So I would consider, for sure, Quicken will update. Now, the other program, there might be a new database program you could get that would import the data that was created by the old one. So that might be a better option for you. But go ahead.
Let me ask on that, Jay. The database program I have is basically a DBF program. Offhand, do you guys know of any software that will upload those files into, you know, some Windows-based database program? And
DBF is a DBase, right?
Say it again, Jay.
Is DBF, is that DBase?
Yeah, DBF, yeah.
Yeah, but is that DBase? Does that DBase ring any bells for you?
It does not, no.
DBF is a DBase file name extension, according to what I'm reading. I'm not sure what software you would use to replace it. Let's see, DBF Viewer, there's Viewers, DBF. There's a program that will convert DBFs to XLS, to Excel files.
Okay. Well, I think ultimately I just have to bite the bullet and you know, updated software, but you gave me some good ideas. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Well, if you are looking to find an XP machine, you might be able to find one from CompuWorks, or you might be able to hunt around and find an XP computer that works if you try searching for one. But really, I would recommend trying to get the programs that you use updated.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for your call. Bye-bye. Well, the Quicken one's easy enough to resolve because Quicken has new versions, and Quicken, you can do Quicken online now even. So all you need is an internet connected computer.
Although his version might be so old, he might not be able to update all the data in that one up to a recent version without going through, like, steps.
You might have to find, like, four old versions and do the incrementals all the way up.
You'll have to evolve your systems from deep in the slime and the mud up to walking on two legs and being online.
If he's still listening, the DBF view program looks like the best converter. There are a lot of command line converters out there that look kind of tough to use, but this one looks like the best of breed, just eyeballing them.
DBF manager. I don't know. All right, so 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Ed.
Ed, you're on the air.
Yeah, I bought a 1 terabyte external drive onto which I did a Time Machine backup from my MacBook, and it only took like 200 gigabytes, okay?
Okay.
Now, am I asking for trouble if I then take this same external drive and attach it to my daughter's MacBook to do a Time Machine on the same external drive? Is that going to get too messy? And hers is probably only 200 or 300 gigabytes also. So it's not a capacity thing. It's just, you know, do I really want to mix Time Machines from two different machines onto one external drive?
It shouldn't be a problem. The Time Machine software is very good at distinguishing, you know, just make sure that but each computer has its own separate individual name.
Yeah, it's based on the host name of the system. So, Time Machine may have changed some. When I first started doing it, I was doing them over the network. And when you do it over the network, it writes it into what's called a sparse bundle. And that's like a weird format. If it's actually directly attached to the computer, yeah, it actually writes it actually in separate files, mm-hmm, more like the regular file system. But it's all based on, if I remember correctly, it's all based on the host name. So, like, now I have it locally attached to one machine, and it writes automatically just all the time. The system's a desktop. It doesn't move. But when my laptop gets on the network, my laptop will automatically back itself up to that hard drive also.
When it's directly connected, what it does, I've done more, I guess, more recent Time Machine stuff. It creates a folder called backups.backupdb, and then it makes a separate folder for each differently named Mac that you connect up and do a Time Machine backup with it.
Okay, so it sounds like it, rather than go out and buy another hard drive, as long as I have the room, I should be able to.
You should be fine, and you can test it pretty quickly. You could browse the contents of the drive to make sure that you have the two different backups before you go. You know, if it doesn't work, you know, you can always go back and start over and back up your main computer and then get a new drive for your daughter.
Right,
but yeah, the only thing I'd say is it depends on what the pain in the neck value of switching back and forth is to you. Because mm-hmm, right now you can get an external drive that you could hook up for, you know, a terabyte is about, what, $50?
Right, right.
Are these both on this? Are these both on a network, a single network?
Well, I mean, our Wi-Fi at home here at the house.
That's the same network.
It is. I would not do the first backup over Wi-Fi, definitely. But after you've connected it to the second computer and done a full backup and it's finished, because that could take a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
After that, if you wanted to, you could put it back on the main computer and share it. And then the other one could see it over the Wi-Fi network could actually mount it and do its backups. It's incrementals,
okay,
from the future, and that way you wouldn't have to move it back and forth.
Right.
The only other thing I can think of to be aware of is that, and this may not be an issue, if you just want a backup, it's a backup, and it'll, you know, once it's done the full backup, the initial full backup, it'll incrementally do it. But the more computers you put on it, the less ability it has to go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what if you're really concerned about is just like, I want a current backup. So if the computer crashes, I can, you know, rebuild it off the time machine backup. That's
right.
Fine. But, if you think you have any desire to say, well, somebody's going to use this to say, oh man, I need this file from 7 months ago.
No,
I need
no.
to go back through there. You're going to lose a lot of that because of, you know, space will be taken up by both systems, and so it won't be able to go back as far in time.
Yeah, right now I was just going to back my machine up and put the backup on the shelf, and then maybe in a month do another backup, unplug it, put it on the shelf. You know, it's really kind of for an emergency, you know, if I lose the machine or spill coffee on it or something where dies.
I'm
not really going to do the little incrementals. So am I kind of using it the right way?
Well, I mean, I leave mine connected 24/7. It mm-hmm. automatically does backups. If I've done a lot of junk, it might take it an hour or two to back
right.
all the stuff up. If I'm not using it, it takes, you know, 30 seconds for it to, like, know that it backs up a couple of files.
Because these incrementals, it only backs up what's changed, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it means that if you deleted that paper, you know, that document, you know, your journal or whatever thing you've been working on, you accidentally delete it, you have the ability to go back to yesterday or two uh-huh. hours ago when that document was still there and pull it off and use it again.
Great. Okay, great. All right, well, thank you very much.
All right, thank you for your call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, well, we're coming up on the top of the hour here. So, tick-tock. And
yeah, I don't really personally, I don't know if there would be much reason, unless you're wanting to save the electricity of having the backup hard drive spinning. I don't know that there's much reason to not just leave it there and leave it attached and just let Time Machine back up all the time.
I leave my I have two. Gee whiz, I've got a lot of storage. I've got 2 8-terabyte drives that I use. I double backup everything, but I also have one of them slated to be my Time Machine. So I write the Time Machine backup to one of them, as long as I've got the space.
I've had to go in and delete old backup sometimes because it runs out of space because I did something huge, like I added, you know, multiple gigabytes of data, and it runs out of space, and it keeps running out of space even though it's supposed to be deleting old ones. And so I've actually had to go in on the command line a few times and run tmutil to actually delete old backups by hand.
Tmutil.
Yep. Time machine utility.
I gathered that.
Yep.
Tmutil.
All right. I think that's also a Pokemon character.
All right, well, you can hear the sound in the background. That's the music telling us it's time to take our top of the hour break. So we're going to go take our top of the hour break and give you some PSAs and such. And we'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to Technology Bytes on KPFT. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Did you know you can find KPFT on the social networking sites Twitter and Facebook? You certainly can, and we'd love you to add us as a friend and get us connected with friends of yours. Join our fan page and check out a special video message from General Manager Dwayne Bradley, as well as keep up with KPFT programmers and staff. Visit facebook.com/KPFT Houston to join us. To follow us, visit twitter.com/KPFT. With both, you can link up with other KPFT listeners, get the latest news about the station, and find lots of extras. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on Twitter, visit twitter.com/KPFT. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Got KPFT transmite por el aire 24 horas del día, 7 días de la semana y cubre diferentes tipos de gente y gente con diferentes estilos de vida. KPFT está aquí cuando usted necesita lo mejor de noticias independientes y música durante el día. Pero manteniendo este tipo de recurso no viene barato. KPFT necesita su contribución para continuar a tener esta estación única cuando usted lo necesite. Si usted está escuchando cuando se prepara por la cama o cuando se está levantando en la mañana para el trabajo, ¿por qué no hablar a la línea de departamentos de miembros, a KPFT, y hacer un miembro? El número es fácil. Para recordar, es 713-526-4000, extensión 314. O puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org y dar su contribución. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston. We now return you to that show you're listening to.
Which is this show, Technology Bites. All right, welcome back, everyone. It hardly seems like we were gone at all. Just a few minutes. All right, we will continue on into the second hour of Technology Bites, unless Barrett has a Barrett time.
No, sorry.
But we should mention...
We do have a Geek Gathering, though, this Friday.
Yes, we should mention the Geek Gathering this Friday.
Yeah, a little late in the week, because I guess how the dates fall, but this Friday, cones, wine, art, darts, bar, coffee, all that kind of stuff. 2808 Milam at Drew, just, I guess, that's south of downtown. Just outside of Midtown, where the parking eases up just a little bit. Things get started at 7:30. They go till the last geek standing. There we, thanks, Flick, dude. Awesome. I don't have an outro for this one now. Bring yourself, bring your laptop, bring anything you want to. I think we're getting the rain out of our system tonight. We should have some good weather for Friday, and that's that for Barrett time.
All right. Yes. Well, we are going to have a geek gathering this Friday, and the weather does look like it's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and I'll be there, but don't really? Let that keep you from
oh yeah in. Well, everybody else not show up. Oh, cool, Pete's coming to town. Yeah. Better not pout, you better not cry. All right, so I see we got some calls in the queue, so that's good. So we're going to move on to the second hour of this fine broadcast.
We also have room for more calls.
We do, at 713-526-5738. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bites, we invite you to call.
We'll take your donation too.
Yes, what the heck. All right, Groovehouse, who do we have up?
All right, up first on the second half of the show, we're going to start it off with Carlos.
Carlos, you're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, gentlemen? How are y'all this evening?
Good. What can we do for you?
All right. I bought two new computers. They're about 6 months old. Windows 8.1, using Internet Explorer. And I've had problems going to websites where it says script, recover script, et cetera, give me all kinds of stuff, and it just freezes, and I can't get to the websites. Now, I do have Chrome on there, and Chrome is fine, but I'm having problems with the Internet Explorer.
On both computers or just one?
Hey, both of them, yeah.
Is it all websites or just a couple of websites?
All of them.
All websites.
Of them. Yeah, and I've Googled it, and I've tried some of the solutions that they offer, and I just said, I'm tired of this. Let me just go to Google Chrome.
Chrome is a good browser, but, I mean, something's obviously wrong with your Internet Explorer.
Did it mention Active Desktop Recovery? Or what did it say? What recovery script? So it wasn't Active Desktop Recovery script. It was just a recovery script error.
Yeah, no, it just says Recover Web Page. I can't remember the rest of it. I listen to you guys right now, and I don't have my computers on, but it just freezes, and you can't scroll down. It just stays there. And after maybe 20, 30 seconds, you might be able to scroll down, but it's just real slow. And it's both – I've tried it here at my house and at the office, and it's just slow. I mean,
I hate to suggest it, and I hate that we go here this early in the second hour of the show, but I would certainly recommend going ahead and giving each computer a quick scan for possible spyware.
I've done that.
With what tool?
AVG.
AVG is not a spyware tool. It's an antivirus program. Okay. I would recommend maybe just it won't cost you anything and it won't take any real time, but hit them both with maybe Hitman Pro.
What is it?
Hitman Pro is one, but I'm sorry, Malwarebytes is the free one. Hitman Pro costs money, but Malwarebytes, which you can get from malwarebytes.org. You can go to geekradio.com and I have a thing called spyware my spyware removal system. It talks about malware bytes and a few other programs you can use to scan your system just to make sure you didn't pick something up that hit both computers, or maybe you installed software on both computers that had a bad payload or something. But I would scan them just to see if there's any issues there, because it's some kind of software problem you've got. It's weird that you have it on two computers. So it tells me it's probably not hardware related, but software related. Right. Are both of these computers yours, or are you the only one who uses them?
They're both mine. I mostly use them. I do have somebody else that uses. They use them here and there, but it's not like a lot.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter how much they use them. But it's the question becomes, what did they install on them, or what websites do they visit? You know, if they visit some bad sites or sites that have a bad payload, they could have gotten them both infected. So I would definitely scan them with malware bytes just to see if that picks anything up. And but if the only issue is Internet Explorer, you know, there's nothing wrong with using Chrome or Firefox as an alternate browser. But if you do have a spyware or malware issue going on, you want to get that cleaned up as quick as you can.
Okay.
All right.
I'll do that. Thank you very much.
All right,
appreciate
good luck,
it.
Carlos. Thanks for your call. Seems unusual that both of them would have that problem. Now, there may be some websites that you're visiting that just don't play well with Internet Explorer. If there's script errors, you can in Internet Explorer, you can try using the compatibility mode to see if that would let you get to the sites, but it's hard to say for sure. But you can also turn off script debugging notifications in Internet Explorer. If you Google search disable script debugging or turn off script debugging, you'll find instructions on how to disable that in your browser. Although I have not had to do that with Internet Explorer for a long time. So my guess is something's going on there. 713-526-5738. All the phone lines are now open. If you want to be on the air with Technology Bytes, this is a good time to call in. 713-526-KPFT. Give us a call. And so, Brewhouse, are you going to the Geek Gathering? Are you a maybe?
I'm a maybe.
You're a maybe?
Friday night? Probably not. I might be shooting a show.
Really?
Yeah.
Which show?
Modest Mouse at Bayou Music Center.
Modest Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good luck.
Yes, thank you.
That works out.
You know, I
might, you know, could show up afterwards. Depends.
I have the, I think the first person that I know personally who got hit by a crypto virus.
Really?
Yeah.
I've had two people at my work get hit with that.
Yeah, this one is it's called CryptoWall, which, from reading about it, evidently, what happened is there was the well-known one called CryptoLocker, and I don't remember if it was the FBI or if it was just a white hat or some white hats that
wrestled control
broke into it, and I guess got all the private keys at that point in time from them and made them available, so anybody who had got trapped by CryptoLocker could search to see if they had a key match and then could unlock all their stuff for free. But it was only till that point in time. So whoever's running CryptoLocker continued running it. And I guess, you know, they took a big hit in revenue because of that. Plus, there was a lot of stuff on the internet then when you Google searched for CryptoLocker that said, hey, go here and, you know, don't pay them. And so they were losing revenue from that. And so it appears that, yeah, they just kind of changed the name of the program, basically, so that people wouldn't be able to search for it and think they didn't have to pay.
They weren't dead set on their name then, huh?
Yeah.
They could just switch it up.
So they called it CryptoWall, but it's probably the same people. And it's interesting. It searches through your whole hard drive and looks for PDFs, Word docs, various other file formats, and then it encrypts them with like RSA 1024-bit encryption.
And it drops an HTML file and a doc file and a text file.
In every directory where
it did
that.
In every directory that tells you how to go and get your stuff unlocked.
And they increase the price like every 24 hours. Like it starts off at like $500 US.
Wow.
Goes to like $1,000 US.
And you have a time limit too.
And then after at some point, yeah, they say that's it, you know.
Well, it's so prevalent now that it showed up on one of my television shows I watch. The Good Wife is one of my favorite shows to watch. And I, you know, I have my stories, but the law firm in the show got hit with the crypto locker or one of the crypto viruses, and they had to finagle getting their access to their data back. But yeah, it's pretty bad. If that happens to you, it's a good idea to, I'm not sure if it reaches out and encrypts attached storage or not, or network storage. That's my fear, is that one of these days.
Yes, some of them are actually.
I know at least one does, and I think this one does, because I was reading through the comments on, I think Bleeping Computer was where I was reading the thread about this, and I think somebody said that they had a computer that was hooked up to the network and had shares mounted when the virus ran, and it went through all of the mounted folders as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it definitely will, especially the ones where they do the ransomware. The worst thing you can do is let them know, hey, you're a corporation, because suddenly that 150 unlock or 250 unlock goes to, you know, 25K or more like that. There's a really cool video. There was a talk at DEF CON 19 a handful of years ago, so it was like 3 or 4 years ago, that's made its way to YouTube, and it's the history of viruses. And it's pretty cool. I forget the guy's name. He is, I think he's blonde and tall. He's probably Norwegian, somewhere like that, a bit of an accent. But he goes through the very first boot sector virus on floppies that, you know, you didn't have hard drives, so you can, you know, just pass them from floppy to floppy, all the way up to the, you know, where I guess viruses would really go to great extents to make themselves known, you know, like say, hey, I'm a virus, hey, I'm here, to the first times when they started to interact with the users. And this is the thing, it kind of reminded me of this. The Crypto Locker, the predecessor to that, was a blackjack game, or some kind of it looked like a Vegas game. More or less, it would encrypt your entire hard drive, take the key, put it in memory, and then so if you turn off your computer at that point, the key's gone. And then it gives you 3 or 4 chances to play like blackjack. And if you win, it does as it says. It unlocks, you know, it gives you back the key in memory, decrypts the hard drive. But if you lose, it toasts the memory and it says, ha-ha. It actually says, ha-ha, you bleep. You lose, and then, you know, your data's gone. So it's pretty cool. It looks at a lot of things like that, all the way from, like, the Joshi, you know, where you'd have viruses that would stay put, except on this guy who wrote it, Joshi's birthday. You had to get use of your computer. You'd have to type, happy birthday, Joshi. And then it would let you back in. So it was a really cool look. It takes about an hour to go through everything. But it goes through, like I said, the very first boot sectors all the way up to Stuxnet, and how a lot of people just completely missed Stuxnet until it had been out there for a couple of years and it actually done what it set out to accomplish to do. And they actually get into, you know, what SCADA systems it was looking for, what the control systems it was looking for, very, very deep into Stuxnet. And then they take a look at, without giving too much away, at least 3 years ago, what the next big threat was. So pretty cool. You know, viruses can be fun as long as they're not happening to you.
Yippee for viruses.
Yay.
713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We've got all of our lines are open. I mean, when you talk about attached storage and if it affects that, I wonder if it like can encrypt your backup.
It probably
depends on what format, file format.
On the plus side, the Crypto Locker virus is educating more people about Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Because in order to decrypt your data, you have to buy Bitcoin.
Well, and they had to write really detailed instructions about how you go about getting Bitcoins to be able to transfer it to them.
Wow.
So if you want to learn how to trade in Bitcoin,
you actually have to download the Tor browser, because they make you go through Tor to get to their site to get the information to do it.
Yay.
They're working really, really hard to keep their identity secret.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air with us tonight. All of our lines are open and continue to be open. So there you go.
Well, people dial the phones. The last cool thing about this whole talk was they made a decision. So Microsoft went out. Now, actually, Microsoft just a handful of weeks ago took down a number of large botnets, and they've actually been out there trying to clean up or do their part to clean up the Internet. But his company at one point had to make the decision whether or not to leave and this, like, the bad hacker email addresses up where they would say, hey, we've encrypted your hard drive. If you want the encryption keys, email us such and such. So they were like, well, do we block these? Do we keep them up? So what would you guys do? Would you leave them up? Would you take them down? Moral question.
What would you do?
At first thought, I just would have taken them down, but his point was they left them up because they're legitimate users that actually need their data back. And if they take those down, even though they're criminals that are profiting from it, they're hurting, you know, kind of innocent people. So they don't mess with those.
The email addresses were on his server?
They weren't on his server. These are email addresses that, because he's more or less, he's a reverse engineer.
Yeah.
He goes and he looks into viruses and looks at stuff like that.
Contacted the people who ran the mail servers to tell them to get rid of those addresses.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably say not, because
they just kind of
you're affecting people that are might actually really need it, unfortunately.
I see.
And we had a call.
We had a call, but they're gone now. Gone. All right, well, we're struggling to get some calls here in the second hour, but we will persevere and do the best we can to encourage you to give us a ring at 713-526-5738. We're not asking for money, just asking for problems. We're asking for trouble.
Maybe that's the problem. Maybe we need to do the Tech Bites locker, and you have to, like, use Tor and get Bitcoin.
Make a pledge to the show if you want to see your data again.
We could make it a low amount.
Yeah, just... Your just annual
one
membership.
Bitcoin.
Yeah. It's a shame that people aren't walking away with, like, hey, I should learn how to backup instead of, hey, I should learn how to Bitcoin with the whole BitLocker thing. But, you know.
Well, just imagine if the CryptoLocker people were more sadistic, you know, they could make you be a gold farmer for them or put you through all kinds of stuff to get your data back.
World of Warcraft style tasks.
Yeah, I need 400 iron, and I'll give you back your email if you build me a hut.
So I'm always learning new stuff off the internet. So I was Googling the call before about the whole website not responding, and apparently a website not responding recover web page error code is caused by a hexadecimal formatting error. That's totally not true. It's like there's just a lot of just straight up misinformation out here. It looks like it's legit. They want you to buy a product. It's a website not responding, recover webpage, buy our product for this. So more or less it's like, hey, I've got to install this software and I will fix all your 404 not founds. Internet's still kind of dangerous.
It is. The ne'er-do-wells have figured out that if they can put the right error message into their content, they can lure you in.
You're getting a 404. And 404 is just like if you mistype a URL or something could have been out there a few years ago on the net and now it's not out there, you'll get a message that's 404. It's nothing to be alarmed about, but there's someone, you know, there could be someone saying, hey, 404, it means you need to give us money so we can fix it.
It's almost as if there's a script out there that's writing these web pages and inserting certain text
into them based on
Google searches.
I think that happens a lot. I mean, that's a known thing.
All right. I see that the calls are coming in now, so that's good. So we'll go to the first call on that Groovehouse screen, the other ones. Groovehouse, who do we have?
Up next, we're going to speak to George.
Hi, George. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
Hi. I have a laptop HP with operating systems Windows 7.
Okay.
And I'm getting a little message in a box when I turn on the computer. Computer works okay. Everything works on it okay. So I just don't understand this message. It reads, at the top, it reads R-U-N-D-L-L. And then in the box is C. I guess that's the operating system. Program, and then it has some numbers, and then the wording, the specified modular could not be found. I have no idea what that means, and it doesn't seem to affect anything.
All right, there's something that loads up when the computer starts, and it's not loading up correctly, and it's throwing up that error.
Okay.
Now, it could be anything, but whatever it is apparently is not affecting your life, so that's good. But it could be some background application tied to something that you've installed on the computer. I've also seen it happen where it's a piece of malware that didn't get completely installed on the computer.
Oh, okay.
So it may be a failed attempt of some malware trying to run and it's just not running, or it's not, the malware is not compatible with your operating system or something and it's failing. It can be a little difficult to try to troubleshoot that and figure it out.
I've run the antivirus software a couple of times.
Which antivirus are you using?
AGS, AVS.
AVG?
AVG, thank you.
As we mentioned before, AVG is a good antivirus, but not necessarily a good anti-spyware tool. It might be worth your while to run Malwarebytes on the computer.
Okay.
It's a free anti-malware software that's designed really specifically for malware issues, and it might find something and clean that up for you. Do you remember? You said it's run DLL. The specified module could not be found or loaded.
No, it says could not be found.
And what's the other text?
I'm sorry. What's the other?
What's the other text? What does it say exactly?
Oh, that's all the text.
Do you know the numbers?
Yes, I have the number.
Tell me. Start.
Okay, the number is.
Start at the beginning of the error message and read it slowly.
Okay. Well, C colon.
And that's your hard drive. C colon.
Okay. / PROGRA.
PROGRA.
I guess it means program.
Programs. Yeah.
Then dash three.
Programs dash three.
There's a space. Then
C colon / programs.
Just program. PROGRA. It's not the complete word.
Oh, PROGA. PROGRA.
Yes. And then a space and then dash the number three / 452.48619.cpp.
All right. That is not ringing any real bells in terms of what that might be, and because of the cryptic wording of the file, it's probably malware.
Yeah, is that a dash for sure, like a hyphen, or does that look like a squiggly dash, like a tilde?
No, I guess it'd be the hyphen before the three.
Okay.
I'm thinking it's probably a tilde. I think it's probably an abbreviation.
Yeah, or it's a shortened thing because that's exactly 8, and it looks like it's a C++ program, so that could be, you know, remnants of some malware. It could be.
I would definitely run some malware detection on the.
So, would you repeat that again? I can go to.
Go to geekradio.com.
Okay.
Say that back to me.
Geekradio.com.
And look on the link that says got spyware or spyware ? Or something on the webpage. Click that link and I talk about spyware and how to scan for it, and how to detect it and how to get rid of it on that page.
Okay.
And all right. Yeah, it's right there on the top menu bar. It says spywares and I haven't updated it for 4 years, but it's still valid. The main program you're looking for is a program called Malwarebytes, and they offer a free version. And you install that on your computer, and you let it scan your computer, and it will see if it finds anything it doesn't like, and it give you the opportunity to get rid of it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try all that. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for your call. Bye. Bye. Hello, Justin.
Oh, hello.
How are you?
I'm well.
You can lift that mic up. You don't have to lean in if you don't want to.
I see. Hello, Jay. How are you doing today?
You look kind of... Put those headphones on. Get comfortable. Oh, relax. Sit back. Pull the microphone into position.
I feel like...
Bend the station to your will.
Oh, I see. The airwaves.
Justin Haynes is here.
They're amazing.
Green shoes.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I remember the radio station was tonight. I was in town, so I thought, you know, I'll see...
Where are you living these days?
In Austin, but I'm temporarily relocated to Houston, so here I am.
Well, Justin's an old friend of the show, friend of computer people.
Yeah.
He likes the computer people, right? Were you at DEF CON this year?
Man, I didn't make it.
Me either.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, that's... I knew that...
That's why you didn't go, because you knew I wouldn't be there. That's why I didn't go, because I knew you wouldn't be there.
It wasn't going to be as cool.
I think both of y'all went on adventures.
Where'd you go?
I think yours was, like, much further away than
mine was far away.
Oh, you had great pictures from yours. I saw some of those.
Are you going to go this year?
I will, yeah.
Not this year, but
you know
next
what?
Year.
I am going to go this year. Right. I don't know how, but I'm going to do it.
Make it happen. Make it so. If you can show up at KPFT unannounced on a Wednesday night out of the blue, you can certainly show up at DEF CON next year.
Agreed.
Well, welcome to the station. We hope that we can keep you entertained.
Well, thank you. I hope I have something to offer. I just don't know.
It remains to be seen. What are you doing in Houston? What brings you back?
Doing some security consulting.
Yeah.
And
Yeah, infrastructure, same kind of area, infrastructure security, and looking for malware on the interwebs and within.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
All right. All right, 713-526-5738. If you just want to have a casual conversation with Justin, our guest tonight, you can do that, or you can ask us about your spyware issue.
Did you recently change the name of the software you run from CryptoLocker to CryptoWall?
Are you a hacker?
Are
you a white hat?
Categorically deny. No,
he likes computers. Let's just put it like that.
Speaking of DEF CON, I would like to point out that Barrett's last tweet is a picture of Loophole. Still. You have not. I mean, I go to the Geek Radio site and I have your Twitter feed, and I'm looking at Loophole, who's a genuine bona fide.
He's looking at you in that picture.
I know. This is a tweet at me. And so I have to look at Loophole.
I sent that tweet under duress.
Giving me some kind of hacker gang sign, holding up his DEF CON 22 badge.
Holding up.
That wasn't actually his.
I can't. I'm not surprised.
We'll get into that. Yeah.
Speaking of badges that were his, Justin was the one that.
Oh yeah, it was like an economy. It was like a Towers of Hanoi puzzle, getting people in and out of parties at DEF CON. It's like, well, I don't have one. He doesn't. I'm going to give this to him. How did that even work?
It didn't.
Somehow we all got it at some point in time.
At some point, he ended up with my badge, and I never saw it again.
But then we got your replacement.
We recovered
all badges, I believe.
Well, except he still – there was a badge that was found.
Yes.
You on an elevator. Somebody out there somewhere doesn't have a badge.
That one I don't know about, but there was a girl who said, you know, I don't need this one, and why don't you take it? And I thought, then I can give that back to Jay.
It worked out.
Yeah.
Happy endings.
Yeah.
All right. Groove House.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with E-Man.
E-Man, you're on the air with Technology Bites, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'm trying to find the. I took a picture. I have the VSOC screen at death. I have an Asus Republic Gamers laptop. I don't know the exact model, but every now and then I get the blue screen at death, and it has something. It says something to the effect of RQL ref not less or equal, and it doesn't happen all the time. It just happens like maybe once a week or something. Every now and then, like that, my screen would just go blue, and the computer would. It'll say it's going to restart, but it never restarts, so I ended up hard resetting it.
How old is the computer?
It's pretty new. I bought it, I want to say 2 months ago.
Where'd you buy it from?
I bought it from the online retailer, but I have the Asus warranty and everything, though, you know, that 1 year, 2 year thing where you drop it or spill water all over it or what have you. I have a warranty on it.
It's possible that you've got a bad driver. It's also possible that you've got bad hardware.
Bad driver or bad hardware?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you've loaded onto the computer in terms. Now, did it come preloaded with the operating system and all that?
Yeah, it came with Windows 8.1, whatever, professional, whatnot. I don't know. Maybe when it was updating drivers or something.
Well, you know, the thing is that if you have a computer that's only a couple of months old and it's throwing up a blue screen, I would avail myself of the manufacturer's warranty to have them check it out. Maybe run some diagnostics on it. Because you might have gotten a bad.
On the picture, it says it has a sad, big giant sad face. Your PC ran into a problem and needs to restart. We're just collecting some error info and then we'll restart your computer. And then it said, if you'd like to know more, you can search online later. This error IRQL.
Not less or equal to, yes, it's driver IRQL, not less or equal. If this is the first time you've seen this stop error, blah, blah, blah. Check to make sure any new hardware is properly installed, blah, blah, blah. Have you added any hardware to the computer? Have you added memory? Have you changed the hard drive or any of that?
No, I haven't done any of that yet. I wanted to, but I haven't done any of that yet.
So chances are the existing hardware has an issue.
Right.
Like maybe you've got bad memory, maybe you've got something else going on. This is the kind of error that I would talk to the manufacturer about, because it's, you want to get it addressed while the computer's under warranty.
Right. Okay, maybe, I guess I'll just call them up and find out. Also, I got a question, like, let's say it's my hard drive or something. Somebody said it might be my hard drive. I asked people at work.
Right. Could be the hard drive, could be memory.
I wanted to replace this with a solid state drive anyway. When it comes to ghosting, will I be able to just ghost whatever's on my hard drive now and then slap it on a solid state and it'll run just like, I won't have to do anything? Or how's
if you
that
do
work?
It right, yeah.
I won't have to do any changes to anything and just put everything on the solid state and just boot it?
If you use the program Ghost and you mirror what is on your current hard drive onto the new hard drive, then yes, conceivably you should be able to just plug that new hard drive in, turn the computer on, and off you go.
Right, because this hard drive, like this particular hard drive, I don't know if it's a hybrid one, but it came partitioned. It has like a D drive, a C drive, and then it has that one partition that has like your, I don't know, your backup or whatever.
Yeah.
But it has, like, I guess essentially three partitions. Will it ghost all three partitions, or will I have to find a hard drive the exact same size, or?
You don't have to find a hard drive the exact same size. It has to be the same size or larger.
Okay.
And I don't remember if Ghost will grab the various partitions. I think Ghost will let you take a partition and ghost it onto the new computer. But it might take you could capture an entire image of the entire disk, partitions and all, put that on the new drive. But yeah, you should be able to do it. And you'll know quick enough once you get going.
I think this drive is 700 gigs. But I don't know if I could find a 700-gig solid-state drive.
You can't.
I mean, if I could
not
find maybe
cheaply.
Like a 500.
Not cheaply, you know? You can't. You're going to be hard-pressed to move. I don't remember. I haven't worked with Ghost extensively to the point where I've taken large drive partitions and tried to put them onto a smaller drive. You could capture a Ghost image, and as long as the expanded image when put back onto a new drive does not exceed the size of the drive that you're moving it to, you'd probably be okay. But you're going to be hard pressed to find a solid state drive of that size, at least for a reasonable amount of money.
Exactly. Okay. Well, my drive's not full or anything. I'm pretty sure I could fit everything in a 500.
There's another program that Justin just brought me awareness called Clonezilla.
Clonezilla. Okay.
And it is similar to True Image, Norton Ghost, and trying to see what it says here. Scroll up. Beep, 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 beep. You might take a look at that, too. Do you have a copy of Ghost?
No, I was going to get one somehow.
Is Clonezilla free? Clonezilla is free.
Clonezilla is free? Okay, cool. Maybe I could do that.
Yeah. And just read up on it and see what it offers. But, again, I don't know about cloning a larger drive to a smaller drive, but as long as the data, like if you have a 700 gig drive, but you only have 200 gigs worth of data.
The other partition is just like, I have SteamOS or Steambox or whatever, but I use that partition to like just install the games on or whatever. Like, but nothing really important is in that one partition. So,
well, the thing you could do conceivably is you could take the main operating system part of the drive and clone that to the new drive. And then you could take the new drive and you could use Windows 7 or Windows 8 to set partitions and then just copy those files from the old drive partitions into the new partitions manually. You wouldn't have to. The only thing you're really worried about with trying to clone the drive is to get a bootable operating system over and your installed programs, but then you could take the operating system and clone it over, and then you could build your partitions and copy the partition data files out of those partitions on the old drive into the new drive.
All right, because my concern was like the drivers and stuff, you know?
Once you clone the operating system, the only thing that the drivers care about is your motherboard, the chipset, and the video card, and network stuff. It doesn't care about what drive it's on. There's not drivers for the hard drive unless you're using like some kind of software RAID or something like that. But for just a standard hard drive, there's no drivers per se that cause the drive to run.
Okay, okay.
The drivers only.
One last thing. I have this thing called Slim Cleaner. What do you guys think about that?
Don't even know what it is.
Slim Cleaner is supposed to, like, I don't know. It's kind of like system optimization, kind of like what is that? Advanced System Care.
Is it like a registry cleaner?
Yeah, it does all that stuff. Registry.
Yeah, I don't believe in registry cleaners.
No,
I don't. I mean, if it's free and you can use it, you can try it, and it might help. If it's free, you're not out anything.
It's not free. It's like I paid for the thing. You know, it's supposed to optimize my computer.
Well, if you own it and you paid for it, you can use it. I don't find these programs to be terribly helpful. They tend, you know, they will do some things.
It'll like remove some of the startup items, you know, like it's supposed to reduce my boot time and stuff like that. But I'm just kind of curious, like, does it actually even do anything, you know?
Well, my contention is that there's nothing that these programs do that you can't do yourself.
Right.
Okay. So I don't pay a software to go through and make these decisions about my computer unless I really have a lot of confidence in it. I don't know anything about Slim Cleaner. It looks to me like it's probably a lot like C Cleaner, which is free, or any of the other dozens of registry cleaning softwares that are available out there.
Okay. Well, that's all I got.
But if you own it and you bought it, I don't see any harm in using it. But I wouldn't go out and buy a program like that myself.
Right. Okay, sounds good. So it's CloneZilla.
CloneZilla.
I guess I'll talk to Ace and see what they say.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Man, Windows still uses IRQs?
You know, today I had to work with we have a number of our employees work out in the field. You know, they work from home offices or whatever, virtual offices as they call them at one of our companies. And of course, you know, when they can't stay connected to the VPN, somehow this is our problem. We have caused this problem. So I actually had to pull the connection logs off of our VPN server to show. This woman called in and said that her VPN kept dropping and it just really kind of took me back to this place where I was supporting internet customers, you know.
Dial up,
yeah. Like, I keep losing my connection. This is somehow your fault.
Yeah.
And trying to explain how much copper there was between them and us and how much internet there was between, you know, them and us. Oh, now with high speed, but dial up, you know, it's just... And so I pulled the logs from the VPN server and showed all the users that have been connected for days and haven't dropped, you know. And then they admitted later that they actually had Comcast coming out to do a call, you know, some work on their stuff because they're having other internet connection problems. So, yeah. There's still a lot of internet out there. Be careful.
Serenity now.
All right, Groovehouse.
Insanity later.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with us tonight. We got Justin here. You can ask him questions. He'll give you soothing answers. 713-526-KPFT. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, it's Palmer.
Palmer.
Hey.
Hey, you're on the air.
Cool. So I had a question. I just got off of work, and I turned on the radio, and I always listen to KPFT, of course, because I'm from Houston, Montrose.
All right.
So had a question about the Microsoft Surface Pro and getting all these pop-ups for, like, Reg Clean Pros, like all these, like, scanning virus control things.
Yeah.
That I go onto the web internet browsers. And I'm having a hard time surfing the web because everything I click on has something highlighted or...
This is the spyware show.
This is like the late 90s.
This is like...
Yeah, I know.
Right. I haven't seen pop-ups like stuff. Yeah,
well, and I haven't seen like link creators, like things that turn words in your web pages into links. There's a browser hijack that'll do that. You've got spyware. You've got malware. You need to scan your system. You need to run malware bytes against it. You need to check your system out. You've got some kind of hijack going on.
Okay.
It's
because it's everything that I click on. I mean, I've turned my browser settings, the pop-up settings completely to block everything.
Yeah.
And they're still everywhere.
That there's malware on your computer that's throwing these pop-ups at you. It's not your browser has no control because there's another program wedged in there that's doing this to you. So you need to scan your system for spyware. You need to you can go to geekradio.com. I've got my suggested tools there. Malwarebytes will clean most of it up, hopefully. If you've got something really, really bad, you may be looking at some harder work to get it cleaned up. You might also consider using a different browser.
Okay.
Like Google Chrome or Mozilla Firefox. You can have those.
I've used all three of those. I've used Internet Explorer.
And they're all doing
Mozilla,
the same thing.
They're all doing it.
Yeah. You need to scan your system for spyware. You've got a spyware problem.
Okay. So just go on the your website.
Yeah, go to geekradio.com. I offer a link to Malwarebytes and also to a program called Hitman Pro. Hitman Pro is really good. It's not free, but it's really good. And there's also another one that's a little trickier to use, but it's called Combo Fix, but it's also free. And these programs will get rid of 99% of that kind of stuff.
Although we'll ask you to do that without your nasty spyware-infested Surface Pro because we want to try and keep the server clean.
Right.
Just kidding.
Okay. Could there have been any app that I downloaded? I mean, how do I know before I download an app?
It comes in many different forms, you know, depending on the website you're visiting, and it could be a completely benign website, but they, you know, you'll get an ad, you'll something will pop up and you'll click it and you'll think you're getting rid of it, but it's actually telling it to install, or maybe you downloaded a program and it was bundled with some other things.
Right.
It's hard to say, you know, where you got it, and it gets really difficult to make that determination. How old is the computer?
I literally bought this probably 2 months ago from a online computer store on Amazon. It was used, but it was from, you know, one of those like online web guys that has a lot of computers and just, you know, sells these used.
It might have had that stuff on there when you got it too.
Probably.
You know, it might have been preloaded with crap.
Probably. It's just been like exactly what I don't know who said it, but it's like I'm playing with a, you know, Microsoft 98 and first going on to the internet and there's like pop-ups everywhere. It's completely slowed down my experience and almost made me like.
Do you have recovery software for this thing? Can you put it back to a like new state, like with the recovery disks or anything like that?
Recovery disk. I mean, I'm not sure. This is the first tablet I've ever gotten.
It's a tablet. It's a Surface. It's got Windows 8 installed on it.
Right.
So it's the Microsoft Surface, right?
Right.
There's probably a recovery partition on there. Let me see. Microsoft Surface recovery. Because there's probably a way to, you can reset. Is it a Surface RT or a Surface 2?
It should be a Surface 2. I think the only difference was the Surface Pro had only one kickout ability for the kickstand, and then the Surface Pro 2 had the, like, you can kick it out twice. So this one, the ad on Amazon was I bought a Surface Pro, just the first one, but this one I think is a 2.
If you Google search refresh or reset Surface, you'll find Microsoft has a site that tells you how you could basically reset the system back to the way it was when you bought it or when it was, when it was new. And that will clean off any spyware or malware or junk that may have been put on there by the person you bought it from.
Cool.
So that's one way to do it. You just want to make sure you back up any files that you care about and save those. Or alternatively, you could try running some of the spyware tools against it to see if that cleans it up. But if you've only had it a couple of months, hopefully you haven't personalized it too much. You can back up your data and restore the system and get it back to a factory fresh state, which should solve most of your problems.
Okay. And is there a good, spyware system that I can install, or virus protector?
Like I said, the tool, well, you don't want a pop-up blocker. See,
you don't.
The thing is, is that if you've got malware on your computer that is causing pop-ups to happen, and then you install a pop-up blocker, this is how I kind of got started with understanding how malware works. You get the spyware, it causes pop-ups. You get another program that's designed to block pop-ups. You still have the malware. It's just that your pop-up blocker's working overtime to get the pop-ups out of the way. And so you're still not, I mean, you don't have any pop-ups, but the computer's like struggling because the one program's throwing pop-ups, the other one's swatting them down.
Right.
You want to find the problem that's causing the pop-ups. Now, there's some pop-ups that are completely legitimate. Certain websites do that. But when you turn the pop-up blocker in your browser on, it will usually dispense with those and you're okay. But if you've got malware causing this, you want to find the malware and get rid of it. And we'll go back to what I said earlier. Malware Bytes, Hitman Pro, Combo Fix, the programs that I list at Geek Radio under my spyware link, those are programs you can run on your computer to help get rid of and mitigate that kind of problem.
Okay.
All right. So go get Malware Bytes at the very, very least and scan your system to see what you've got. And again, if you've got a really bad spyware problem and you can't fight it with these tools, you can always restore the computer back to factory fresh, and that should solve it.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks for your call.
All righty. Bye.
I feel like I'm, you know, it's a show from years ago.
Yes, it's funny. I'd actually pretty much forgotten what that was like that, that even happened, that, you know, you get those pop-ups. But I actually was watching a movie that I'd watched a few years ago called Eagle versus Shark, which the main character is one of the guys from Flight of the Conchords. But anyway, in there, his friend is this guy who has a computer, but to him, he's like, oh, he's the best computer hacker he knows. Like, he probably knows more about computers than anybody that he knows. And the guy's pretty incompetent, but he turns around, so his back's to the computer, and he's talking to him, and then like a porn video pops up on it. And so the person that's with the guy gets embarrassed, and then he's like, oh, you've got some porn on your computer. And he turns around, and he goes to close it, and then there's a pop-up window, and then a pop-up window, and then like 30 pop-up windows. Hmm. And I was like, wow, I pretty much forgot that happened, like that was like common occurrence.
Yeah, I haven't seen a pile of porn pop-ups in a while.
I used to, in the late 90s, I worked at a, you know, Fortune 100 company and was walking back to where all our system admins were. And this guy it's only funny because this guy he was one of those people you knew was not doing anything wrong. He was trying to download a patch for a Sun machine, I think. And I walked up to ask him a question, and he clicked the link to download this thing, and his machine just came alive with porn. I mean, he was a very devout Muslim, and it was just he was wrecked. I mean, he really was upset, and it's kind of like, hey man, you know, I know you're legit, but oh, it's the worst person for that to happen to. Because anybody else, you can just laugh at him, accuse him of actually wanting the porn, and then you move on. But he was all upset.
Well, there you go. All right. 713-526-573. You know, you as we become, you know, those of us that work in the industry and work with computers a lot and see all the kind of crud that's out there, you kind of get, you know, desensitized to it a little bit. It's like, oh, God, not this again. But I can imagine that some of this stuff is quite terrifying to some people. You know, if you've, like, the stories we used to hear would be, you know, maybe somebody had their grandkids or their nieces and nephews over for the holidays. They'd use the family computer or that person's computer, install a ton of crud on it, and then they'd leave, and then they'd go back to use their computer, and they would get all these horrifying pop-ups or, you know, this kind of stuff happening. Or even worse, they might have downloaded a whole bunch of wares or copyrighted material, and the RIAA is coming after them.
You could pretty much, and usually at some point in the conversation, you know, the grandparent would say, "There's something called LimeWire on here."
Yeah, LimeWire is what started
the
whole thing.
What's this bonsai buddy?
Wow,
weather bug.
I'm looking at this monitor now that I didn't know I needed, and now I need it. It's a LG 34-inch curved LED backlit monitor. Oh, God, it's so nice looking.
The curved one
is it 5K though?
Or 4K?
5K.
Oh, 5K. Whoa.
The new iMac.
The new iMac.
The new iMac is a 5K monitor. So you can edit 4K video on it, and it actually boxes it in, and you have all the controls and, you know, timeline and stuff underneath in the one screen.
I was out looking at 4Ks over the weekend, and even some of the curved ones, but the issue with the curved ones are you can only get more than, I guess you get more than 3 or 4 feet back, and that curvature kind of washes out. You just kind of lose the effect.
Huh.
Because at that point, you're just looking at, you know, you're actually, I guess, mushing it in by a few inches versus it wrapping around. So it'd be great, I think, for a desktop machine, like if you're right up in there, but, you know, for like a living room machine, I'm not too sure if it would work.
Jay's goal is to have 3 or 4 of them, and you put them in a circle and sit on them in a rotating chair.
That would be a good goal to have. Well, I tell you, I finally got around to, like, you know, cleaning my office, although it's starting to deteriorate a little bit. It's still usable. And I've just re-fallen in love with my 27-inch iMac. It's so nice to work on. Here's what a bad geek I am. I'm such a bad geek. I have had this 27-inch iMac for now a couple of years, I guess, or a year and a half now. And I've really only started getting to use it. And I realized that, you know, it has a terabyte hard drive. It's got SSD partition. It's all that. It's really nice and quick. But it only had 8 gigs of RAM. And I finally said, you know what? I'm just going to upgrade the RAM on this thing. So I went online and found the RAM, and I ordered it, and I bought it. And I've had the RAM for 2 days, and I haven't installed it yet. I mean, what kind of geek am I? I've got 16 gigs of RAM ready to go into my iMac.
Just sitting there devaluing.
Yeah, if you're not going to use that, give it to me, because I can use it.
I can use it. I definitely... No, I just haven't taken the time.
It's been 2 days.
I know, right? We could run City at Home. It's the 90s show.
Now, you have to ask yourself, if I've let it sit on my desk for 2 days without installing it into my own computer, how much priority am I going to give to finding it, having it find its way to you?
I can come by and get it.
Oh, would you do that? why don't you just Yamame and...
Yeah, I'll catch up to you.
I was waiting for that to come out.
Ketchup rears its ugly head again.
Laugh it up, Puffball.
Jay's nemesis.
No, this show is my nemesis right now, the spyware program. All right, Groovehouse.
Yes.
What's the phone number?
713-526-5738.
And we're looking for some modem debugging and trumpet windsock calls.
Ooh, there you go. Yes, a Netscape Navigator. My Netscape Navigator doesn't seem to be getting me to the Netscapes.
My communicator.
I'm looking for Gopher servers.
Well, in order to find Gopher servers, you have to think like a Gopher surfer.
Servers.
I said surfer. Yeah. Mine is better. Gopher surfer. I mean, you can't
in
think
in Gopher like space.
You cannot think like a Gopher server.
A funny thing on
what did Gopher. They happen on the way to the Gopher?
No, I mean it was kind of a between Usenet and FTP kind of thing. Except they tried to get fancy, and so when you navigated from one Gopher server to another, the client had this like sort of pseudo 3D like flying effect. So, like, if you remember the, you know, usually on bad movies, like, say, well, or, and even decent movies, like Jurassic Park, when she's navigating around in the computer security, and it's, like, flying from building to building and stuff, they put that on, except, of course, so there's this sort of virtual 3D interface to the thing, except once you got to a server, what were you getting off the server? You were getting a list of files. So it's the same old, you know, you get this fancy flying thing to go to some other server, and then when you get there, it's basically the same old flat window with a list of files in it. You click on one and it downloads. And somebody actually took the time to build this, you know, virtual reality for online interface to go from one box of files to another.
Now you're Gopher.
It was so early 90s.
Gopher it.
Take these last couple calls before we
before we run out of time.
Yep. Up next, we're going to speak with Jerry.
Jerry, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
My question has to do with encryption. Okay. And the idea is, you know, if you want to upload something to the cloud, you want to have it encrypted.
And so you might put it inside of a TrueCrypt container, or put, you know, multiple files inside of a TrueCrypt container or WinZip file or something like that. The problem is that if you change just one file, that whole container changes. That whole container now has to be re-uploaded up into the cloud. Are you guys aware of a technology or a technique to be able to just encrypt files at one file at a time, so the whole container doesn't have to be rewritten up into the cloud?
Is this something that you're trying to, you want to use this as a backup solution, or you just want to use it almost like Dropbox, where you're just putting files up there that you can pull down from elsewhere, or what are you trying to accomplish?
Yes. Actually, both scenarios I specifically thought of, but the problem's the same.
You can encrypt single files.
Yeah.
I don't know how you would read those. If you encrypted a file, can you throw it up in on a cloud server and then access it from another computer and decrypt it?
Right. Yeah, but if you're trying to use files kind of fast, I want to make it more transparent instead of having to just every time I want to, like if I'm doing it as a backup solution, that's a lot of files. I don't know which file I'm going to touch next, so I don't want to have to go through and back up my 10,000 files.
There's a lot of ways to do it. I think the first thing you have to ask yourself is what are you risking? Like how you don't want to lose your files, you don't want to encrypt something and not be able to get to it. But, you know, if there's a lot of encrypted backup solutions out there, you know, there's Mozy and there's several others. I'm not going to endorse anyone in particular, but I think one key feature that you want to look for, at least for a backup solution, is do you generate and store your own key? It sounds like a bad feature, but if you're not handling and owning your own private key and no one else has it, okay. So that's cool. If you know that and you're shopping for that, that's good to know ahead of time, because that's probably going to be your biggest limiting factor to what solution you use. Because like for transparency, for moving from one machine to another, if you don't have that key, well, you know, like you can't. There's kind of a trade-off there with your key management.
Is there a way using cloud storage to just upload a file, just a regular old file, and have it be encrypted once it's put into the cloud storage?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I would say encrypt locally and they move up. I know that even if you want to go something as low tech as like GPG, you can do GPG dash dash decrypt dash all and encrypt all, and it'll decrypt everything in an entire directory. But just only because we're out of time, we could go in more depth, but we've got like 13 seconds. About.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are out of time.
All right, thank you.
All right, thanks for your call. And I apologize to Tom that we're not going to be able to. Can we?
Tom and Jerry, we had to cut short.
All right. Well, you have been listening to Technology Bites, the Justin Haynes episode. So be sure and download the podcast. It was a good question towards the end. It wasn't spyware. Too bad we didn't have time for it. So maybe call in next week when we do Technology Bites again.
You're gracious hosts.
Oh, we are. You're a gracious guest. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
And Justin, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you.
Why is it so difficult to change our beliefs and behaviors even when we know they no longer serve us? How can certain individuals reverse incurable diseases while others suffer the effects of childhood wounds despite years of therapy? These are two of the questions Dr. Mario Martinez will explore with the audience at this special KPFT event. Dr. Martinez, author of The Mind-Body Code, will be discussing his concepts on the relationship between the mind and body at 7 p.m. on Tuesday, November 11th at St. Paul's United Methodist Church, which is located in Houston's Museum District. Tickets are available now at kpft.org. The book, The Mind-Body Code, will be available during a book signing at the end of the talk. Again, Dr. Mario Martinez speaks in Houston at a KPFT event on Tuesday, November 11th. This is 90.1 KPFT, Houston.
KPFT has just concluded its fund drive, and we want to take a moment to thank you for your support. This radio station receives virtually every dollar for its operations from listeners like you. That donation is appreciated. If you promise to send a check, please make sure to mail it when your envelope arrives. And if you didn't get to contribute during the membership campaign, you can do it right now at kpft.org. Giving to KPFT does more than make you feel good. It's your chance to help expand someone else's mindset through independent arts, ideas, and culture. 90.1 helps people imagine the bigger world beyond their bedrooms, their neighborhoods, and their own expectations. You make it possible to help others grow. Please donate if you missed your chance by visiting KPFT